I'm Maria Zylstra, full lingua franca here on ABC Radio National, with this week, Ian Malcolm, an honorary and emeritus professor of applied linguistics at Edith Cowan University in Western Australia, who's going to explain how Aboriginal English is in fact, yes, another dialect of English, we know that, but that it isn't a dialect of Australian English, since it predates that, having developed separately and differently to become something else, an independent variety, something of their own that they made for themselves, right?
That's right, yes. I'd say that from the time of settlement, two different Englishes progressively developed in Australia, one among the settler community and the other among the indigenous community. The settler varieties were eventually levelled out into Australian English and standard Australian English, but meanwhile the indigenous people had a different path towards English. They were not, of course, taught English. They learned it by picking it up, pidginizing it, and progressively the pidgin foundation became the basis of what was eventually to become Aboriginal English. And it's interesting that from the beginning, the New South Wales pidgin that was used by Aboriginal people and between Aboriginal people and the settlers soon seemed to diverge into two varieties, one of which was spoken mainly for interactions between Indigenous people and the settlers, and the other which was spoken among Indigenous people, who, as many of them moved away from their lands where their languages were spoken, needed to have some sort of lingua franca to communicate with one another.
One of the things that you've pointed out is that pidginisation, that borrowing, that adoption of words from English that native peoples here in Australia used, that started well before there was kind of any real settlement. So it was during the time of convict settlement, really, before Australian English got going.
Well, I think that clearly the early situation was one of developing a kind of fairly unpredictable jargon. And this jargon would have contained some words from the Aboriginal languages, some words from varieties like the maritime forms of English that were picked up from sailors, some words that were from various varieties of English that they heard. Interestingly, there seems to be more of a legacy from Irish English in Aboriginal English than there is in Australian English. In time, things stabilised, and that's when we would say things began to level out into New South Wales pidgin. Now, with the further course of time, rather later, it developed into the mother tongue of some groups of Aboriginal people. That is, it became a Creole. The Creoles, in some cases, through the ongoing influence of English, decreolised.
When you say decreolised, can you explain what you mean?
Yes. When a Creole is formed, it really happens because a group of people who have been mother tongue users of Aboriginal languages have children who grow up hearing increasingly pidgin being used, and the children start to use pidgin as their main language. And as the pidgin is used as a main language, it has to sort of expand in functions and develop a system that is that of a full language. And that's what we call a creole.
Mm.
But when that creole is influenced heavily by the English from which it came, it tends to decreolize and become more like English, but not the same English as that which is passed down by English speakers.
Right, because it's done a loop around somewhere else first.
That's right, yes.
Well, there's a general lack of knowledge about this dialect of English that's spoken by Indigenous Australians. It's generally regarded as a kind of a rubbish form or a limited version that's used because there's an idea that they can't talk English proper, perhaps because of poor education.
Yes, I think that we tend to judge other people's English on the basis of our own. And when we hear what seem to be endings left off, important words like the verb to be being missed out, and so on, it looks as if this is a very careless English. It looks as if this is an inadequate English. We don't realise that English can function in many different ways and that it is possible to have a different form of English that is derived from Creole origins, Pidgin and Creole origins, that is a fully acceptable dialect of English. So we tend to sort of write off Aboriginal English as if it's inferior, not realising that it is a fully developed dialect which expresses the needs of its own speakers.
Yeah. And people aren't just parrots. They don't just mimic what they're taught or what they hear. And if you're at home in a language, you adopt it, you change it. Every generation does that. That's how come there are so many forms or dialects of English, isn't it? And Australian English, American English, Singlish, you know, Singapore English. I wonder whether that isn't perhaps a good parallel for this kind of Aboriginal English that you're talking about, because it's also regarded in Singapore as a kind of a less good or less proper form of English that perhaps shouldn't be used.
That's right. There was an Indian linguist who said for English to function normally in a country like India, it has to become Indian. And I think that this principle applies all around the world. There are many, many different Englishes because people in different parts of the world have taken ownership of English, and that is, they've used English to express the things that are relevant to them in the way that fits in their culture. Interestingly, some work that's been done in the United States has suggested that America's second tongue is not Spanish, but the English that was developed by the indigenous people in America, who first of all started off being taught English. In fact, the children of the indigenous Americans were put into schools to learn English. But what happened was what I would call reverse colonization. Once these communities had English, they developed it in a different way so that it became a different language to express their meanings. And in a sense, this is what's happened all over the state and indeed all over Australia. English has been indigenized by Aboriginal people, and it has come to have certain agreed forms that are recognisable right across the continent, which are expressions of the identity of the Aboriginal speakers.
Well, Professor Malcolm, On the basis of this understanding then, you have developed a kind of a position of advocacy, and you're advocating what then? It's not this oppositional dichotomy between the two dialects of English where one has to take over from the other one, but you're advocating something else, aren't you?
Well, Aboriginal people increasingly are saying that the English that they use is their own, and there are expressions of ownership of English. Now, when people have an English that they own, and then they go to school, and they are taught that that's not English, and they are expected to conform to patterns of an English which they have not grown up using, then you get resistance. Within the wider community, it's easy to suggest that English is English, and that means standard English. To have national testing, which tests people on their literacy, assuming that the only English is standard English, and people that have a different English tend to come out at the bottom of the test results.
So, perhaps finally then, in order to bridge that kind of fundamental misunderstanding, there needs first, you say, to be a recognition of that there is a different way of understanding that's being brought to the communication.
Yes, I think that we need to recognise the fact that there are two Australian varieties of English that are present in school classrooms where Aboriginal speakers are present, and that this is going to affect the communication, and that the only fair way to approach this is to have some kind of place in education for both dialects. Not that we teach Aboriginal English, but that we teach Aboriginal English speakers on the basis of some sensitivity to their dialect and where it differs from standard English. So we have to have some sort of balance of rights of speakers of different dialects in the classroom, and we have to recognise that education is supposed to be adding to what the person brings to the school rather than detracting from it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maria.
Ian Malcolm retired as Professor of Applied Linguistics in 2003 from Edith Cowan University after having been there for 38 years. But he continues consulting in the field in the use of Aboriginal English in education, in which he began back in the early 1970s when he was involved in a statewide survey into the English spoken by Aboriginal children in Western Australian primary schools. He is this week speaking at a joint conference of the Australian and New Zealand Associations of Applied Linguistics, as well as at the annual conference of the Australian Linguistics Society, both of which are being held in Canberra, where a host of other language events are also happening as part of the fortnight-long Langfest there. And Professor Malcolm was a star turn last week at the 17th Annual Conference of the International Association for World Englishes, held at Monash University's School of Languages, Cultures and Linguistics. For Lingua Franca here at ABC Radio National, I'm Maria Zylstra. Ciao, ciao.
On the Health Report, new research into the safety of medications for children and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Whether a popular complementary medicine for men with enlarged prostates works, a study that's rocked the multi-billion dollar commercial disease management industry, and lessons from the Western Desert. That's with me, Norman Swan, and if you want to hear about all that, download a Health Report podcast from Radio National's website.